Hello, everyone. Well, last night, among other things, I posted a boo in which I started to express some thoughts about Philip Pullman. But then, as usual, I ran out of time because I was waffling too much. Story of my life. Well, the estimable Miss Sarah Hillis expressed a desire to hear those thoughts that did not get posted last night. And, as always, I'm happy to oblige. So here I am to give you a taste of what I think I was thinking last night. As I recall, I was saying that the lovely Paul O'Mani blog on the internet had sparked the desire within me to reread Philip Pullman. But I did not want to go back to his Dark Materials trilogy, because I am now fully aware of the anti-church, anti-religion stance that Pullman had when he wrote those books. Now, when I first read Northern Lights, or The Golden Compass, as it's called in America, I had no clue. I just found it at the library and thought it sounded like a really good story. So I took it home and read it and was highly impressed. I have every respect for Philip Pullman as a craftsman. I have ever since I was a teenager. And so when I saw this Northern Lights book at the library when I was 20-some-odd, I absolutely had to read it. It was an immediate must-read-this sensation that I got when I found the book. But at the time, I think partly because it took place in a parallel universe, I took it mainly as a highly colored, highly imaginative fantasy work. And I didn't try to analyze it or overthink it or place any significance on anything in it. Well then, I read The Subtle Knife a few years later, and that certainly gave me a clue that something was not quite right in Dodge City. Part of that book, of course, takes place in our own world, because Will Perry's world is also ours. And yeah, then I really began to realize that he had some sort of agenda for writing these books. Then I heard an interview that he did. I can't remember for which news organization, the name is currently eluding me, sorry. In which he explained his agenda. And then, even more enlightening, I read an essay online in which he basically took a reverse C.S. Lewis stance and was completely anti-Narnia. And he even said, really, in so many words, that he had written these books as kind of a remedy for the whole Narnia series. Well, that got my goat a little bit, I must confess. Because when C.S. Lewis wrote the Narnia books, he actually did not have an agenda. For him, they were stories and they evolved organically. He did not set out to make Aslan a Christ figure. That just sort of happened naturally. And so it rather saddens me that Pullman wrote these Historic Materials books with a definite anti-church stance in mind. Basically, to show kids, well, you know, fantasy books don't have to have a godlike figure in them, or don't have to have anything to do with Christianity, or, you know, God can be bad, basically. So I respect him, but I'm afraid I have to disagree with his opinion, and it really saddens me. His depiction of church is bloody horrible. I'm sorry, but it is. And he and his ilk, people like Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens, seem to forget that although a lot of bad things have been done in the name of religion, so many good things have been performed in the name of God as well. Now, I also believe that the bad things which have been done resulted because people actually twisted God's message for their own purposes and their own ends, and they misused God's word. So they actually had nothing to do, as I see it, with God himself. And that's why the depiction of God and of church in the Amber Spyglass especially really bothers me. Having said that, I would still recommend that people read the books because they are really quite fascinating stories. And actually, I have really enjoyed listening to Paul Amani read to his daughter. But now that I know all about Philip Pullman's agenda, I can't help but see these books in a totally different light, and I cannot take them just as stories. So for me, it's just a rather saddening process, sort of being unable to enjoy the rich imagery of the book, because now I know, for him, why things are the way they are. I hope that makes sense. I apologize if it doesn't. So anyhow, in order to remedy that, I'm going to reread a series that I absolutely love, and which I'm sure was written with no agenda in mind, other than perhaps to provide a window to us modern readers on Victorian society and the stiff and stodgy culture of Victorian London. that, of course, is the lovely Sally Lockhart trilogy. Those books are literary masterpieces, as far as I'm concerned. They take place in Victorian London, and they're about a young woman who is strikingly brave and independent in the face of her culture. Circumstances pretty much force her to be that way, starting from book one, when she discovers that her father died under mysterious circumstances, and that there are a lot of dark things in her family's past, and she has to go and find out what those things are. So she ends up being forced into experiencing all these adventures that make her the brave, outspoken, high-spirited young woman that she becomes. And then in book two, much to the shock and shame of her London colleagues, she ends up becoming a financial advisor. But she finds out that some of her clients are losing money due to the villainous goings-on of a nasty ne'er-do-well, so she has to try and put a stop to that. And then book three, oh my goodness, book three is really the pièce de résistance. I can't even tell you why without giving away a massive spoiler, but oh, I will tell you, that man, Pullman, had me up all night reading his bloody book, and my stomach was tied into knots because of the various convolutions of the plot, and I was literally on the edge of my seat waiting for what was going to happen and wondering what on earth would befall Sally and her friends this time. It was brilliant. So, having forgotten a few of the plot elements, I think I'd like to refresh my memory, so I'll satisfy my urge for Pullman by delving back into those books again. Anyhow, there you have my Pullman-related thoughts, for what they're worth.